Senate will please come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Bonamici, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Devlin, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, Ferrioli, George, George, Girard, Girard, Hass, Hass, Johnson, Johnson, Cruz, Cruz, Metzger, Bonas Anderson, Monroe, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Nelson, Przanski, Przanski, Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Schrader, Starr, Starr, Telfer, Telfer, Verger, Verger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Whitsett, Winters, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum being present, we will post the colors. The Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Senator George. Our invocation today is from Pastor Dale Phipps of the Real Life Christian Church in Cornelius.
Thank you for the honor to be here. I would ask that each of you just join me in a word of prayer. My Lord and God, I am incredibly grateful that you have given us life. I'm grateful for this amazing state that we get to call home. Lord, thank you for all those people you've placed in our lives, our family and our friends, those people who we share each adventure that life brings our way. Lord, I thank you for this group of people who've dedicated their lives to serving you, to serving others, and to making this state all that it is. Lord, today I pray that you give us wisdom. I pray that you give us compassion. I pray most of all that you give us a heart that beats for those people we serve. Lord, I thank you, and I pray all of this in your name. Amen.
Courtesies of the Senate. Chair recognizes Senator Prozonsky.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I ask courtesies be extended to Sandra Johnston. Sandra is a deputy fire marshal with the city of Eugene. She's been with the department for a little over a year, and she's here today to show her support for the passage of HB 2365, which is the ban on toy lighters. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further courtesies? Remonstrances? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I'd just like to point out the article in today's Oregonian on the front page on China and a timber company here in my part of the country that's going to invest $300 million in China to do what we could be doing in Eastern Oregon. Just because of our laws and our policies, you know, you folks are going to hear from me probably 70 times this year about let's use some more water out in our state to develop some good things in our part of the country. We have 66,000 acres of land that's available for irrigation in Umatilla and Morrill counties that's been taken out of irrigation. I don't know how many jobs that creates, probably $1 billion worth of jobs, but I'll continue to give this message. Allow us to use our natural resources to create a stream of income that will help us fund our public services. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Are there further remonstrances? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This morning I was invited to attend the beginning of the House session as a Rotarian representing Bend, because today is the 104th birthday of Rotary International, which was established in Chicago, started in Chicago. And interestingly enough, it was only 5 years later that the first Rotary Club in Oregon was established in Portland. So I got an opportunity this morning to visit the other side of the Capitol, and just want to let you know that today is a birthday, 104, for Rotary International.
Thank you, Senator. Further remonstrances? Well, I'd like to take a moment to congratulate one of our own, Senator Joanne Verger's grandson. James Verger, a sophomore at North Bend High School, participated in the high school state swim meet at Mount Hood Community College in Gresham over the weekend. And he set a new 4A, 3A, 2A, 1A meet record in the preliminaries of the 500 freestyle on his way to winning the state title. James also was the leadoff swimmer when the 400 freestyle relay team broke a 33-year record at North Bend High School. So congratulations to your grandson, and what a great performance. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, the Speaker informed the House has passed House Bills 2162, 2170, 2213, 2256, 2257, 2258, 2436, 2107, 2195, 2210, 2259, 2274, 2277, 2238, 2045, 2061, 2065, 2106, 2161, 2252, 2273, 2375, and adopted HCR 3.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 855, Sub 1, committee report summary number 16 was distributed to members February 19th. Summary number 17 was distributed February 20th. And number 18 was distributed February 23rd. This information will be recorded in the journal and status report. So ordered. Reports from special committees. Propositions and motions. The chair recognizes Senator Devlin. Under propositions and motions.
Me. Thank you, Mr. President, members. I move that final consideration of SCR 4 and HB 2365 be made a special order of business immediately.
Senator Devlin has moved that final consideration of SCR 4 and HB 2365 be made special orders of business immediately. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, this will help expedite our business today. Urge your approval.
If there is no objection, so ordered. Do you wish to close on that? If not, the question is on making SCR 4 and HB 2365 special orders of business immediately. Those in favor will answer aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. Motion is carried. We'll now proceed to the special order of business, and the clerk will read the bill.
Senate Concur Resolution 4, Memoriam Hank Collins, 51 of 2008.
Chair recognizes Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. President. Fellow colleagues, I got your attention, please, and some quiet. Sitting at my desk today is the widow of a good friend of mine, Hank Collins. Hank came to Southern Oregon in 1987, was the first non-medical health director we ever had in the county. He soon took on the duties not only of the health care director, but human services only also. Hank was an unusual man, came out of Tennessee, about 6'2". Tall, thin, had a wonderful southern drawl, did some very innovative things in our county. Our county was the first one to have an integrated service out in White City, where we brought all the services together of all the different services that human services does in one place, so that a person could come in and get their food stamps, get on the health plan, get taken care of. He pioneered programs in mental health and drug and alcohol. He also put together and facilitated the first efforts to clean up the air in the Rogue Valley. The Rogue Valley has very bad air quality because we have an inversion in that area. It's the worst inversion on the West Coast. We now have some of the cleanest air on the West Coast because of what Hank Collins did. And you can read in the Senate concurrent resolution all the things he did for a page and a half for over 20 years down there. But I'd like to say just a couple of words about my friend Hank Collins. I go into his office quite often, and Hank would be sitting behind his desk. It was pretty austere, pretty humble, because Hank was a humble guy. He'd look at me, and he'd say, "Alan, how are you?" And he'd put that "you" in there. And he actually meant what he said. He really wanted to know how I was. And he was that way about all the people in our county, especially those that couldn't speak for themselves. People who suffer from persistent mental illness, people who suffer from drug and alcohol addictions, young women who are pregnant and needed help. Hank was there for those people, because that's the kind of person Hank Collins was. He died very prematurely at age 56 during our last session on February 12th. So I couldn't attend that funeral. I was up here, and I was very sad not to be there for your husband. We are honoring him today. A great man, a man from Tennessee we're all going to miss and we all loved. Thank you, Mr. President.
Is there further discussion? Not. Senator Bates, do you wish to close? The question now arises on third reading and final adoption of SCR 4. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should be adopted will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder.
Aye.
Farioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Hass.
Aye.
Johnson. Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Mons Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Brzezinski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader. Schrader.
Senator Schrader.
Starr. Telfer. Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, President Courtney, excused, Boquist, Carter, Johnson, Starr, 26 ayes.
SCR 4, having received a constitutional majority, is declared adopted. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2365, relating to novelty lighters and quiet emergency.
Chair recognizes Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I would like to request unanimous consent to use visual aids during this presentation.
Is there any objection?
My co-chair this morning.
Is there any objection? Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. Colleagues, House Bill 2365 comes to us from the House where it received 59 aye votes with one excused, and your Senate Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs where it passed unanimously. This bill prohibits the manufacture, distribution, and sale of novelty lighters in Oregon. It authorizes the state fire marshal to define novelty lighters and to seize and destroy listed products. If necessary to achieve compliance, the fire marshal can ask the attorney general to seek civil penalties. Now, colleagues, if you grew up in my generation, you heard about, baby, you can light my fire. Well, this is no laughing matter and no joke, because novelty lighters are a real problem. And I want you to listen to this story, colleagues, because when we heard it in committee, it was a very moving story. In 2000, in what is now my Senate district, the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue received a call. When they arrived at the home, they found a burning home and two young boys, ages 2 and 6, who had been pulled out on the lawn by their mother. Despite desperate attempts by the paramedics to resuscitate them, one was pronounced dead and the other critically injured. An investigation revealed that the younger boy had a fascination with a lighter that was in the home, shaped like a toy dolphin. And other fires directly attributable to novelty lighters have occurred in Oregon since then. One mother received third-degree burns on her feet when her 2.5-year-old set the bed on fire with a Christmas tree lighter. Now, I want you to look at this, colleagues. It's a little Christmas tree with a face on it and a little lever at the top. And you know what happens when you push this little lever, very easy to push down? A flame comes right out of the top. A home was destroyed in the Umatilla Fire Protection District by a fire that was started by a 4-year-old child playing with a lighter that looked like a toy horse. A lighter that produced a torch-like flame that reached a temperature of 2,400 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, these are actual products that kids at play will put near their hands and faces. Now, you may remember that a few years back there was a movie called Finding Nemo, and one of the fast food places had a Nemo that they passed out with their meals. Now, I want you to look at these two. Now, we want kids to find Nemo, but we want them to find the Nemo that shoots water out of its mouth. And that's this one. When you push down on the back, on the fin, water squirts out of the mouth. Well, when you push down on the fin of this one, a flame comes out of its mouth. Water, flame. They both look like toys. In the hands of children, these are deadly. Now, colleagues, there's a lot more of these examples, and I'm going to have the senator from Sherwood, the committee vice chair, to demonstrate how appealing some of these lighters are. So my colleague from Sherwood will show a few more examples so you can see just how dangerous these lighters are. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. President. When the bill was originally scheduled in committee, I almost automatically knew that I was going to vote no on the bill. As you know, I typically don't vote for bills that would increase regulation on what I view as a product that is fairly harmless. But as we got the testimony, they started showing us comparisons of the toys that children play with and the toys that are the lighters that are now made into the idea of toys. These two right here represent something that I know many kids in my family played with, small tractors. One of these is a lighter, and one of these is a toy. And I could quickly see that the idea of novelty lighters has gone away from the simple concept of something that an adult would enjoy, but something that was actually an attractive nuisance to small children. Now, I won't make any comment about how the good senator from Washington County, hers actually light, and they took the gas out of mine. I'm not sure exactly what that's supposed to, because I noticed that none of mine light and all of hers light, but This is the one right here that actually is a lighter. I can't show it to you because they don't trust me with gas. But nonetheless, the fact was is that during the testimony, I came to believe that that these pose a serious enough threat to our children that there needed to be some action taken. I asked the agency in charge of rule writing of their definition or how broadly they'll write the rules. They gave me confidence that the rules would be drafted narrowly, and it gave me the confidence to vote for the bill and to address what I see as perhaps a growing public nuisance. And I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Chair recognizes Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, President Metzger. A question of the carrier, please.
Which carrier would you prefer, Senator Whitsitt?
Senator George.
Senator George, would you answer a question by the senator?
Yes, I would.
He will.
Thank you, Senator. Approximately how many children have been injured in the last decade in Oregon by...
I believe the senator from Washington County addressed the issue, but as I remember from testimony, there was 3 incidents in the state of Oregon since 2000.
Thank you. Another question, please.
Would you respond to another question?
Sure.
He will.
Senator, approximately what is the economic impact of the sale of these type of lighters in the United States?
Mr. President, as I understand, there an estimate that we're given in committee, if I can remember correctly, is somewhere in the neighborhood of about 70 million of these lighters will be sold in the United States in the next 5 years. And so if you do the math of $5 to $10 a piece, I'm guessing somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 million or so.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Senator George, do you wish to close? He does not. The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2365. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Perioli.
No.
George.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Hass. Hass.
Aye.
Johnson. Cruz. Metzger.
Aye.
Juanes Anderson.
Aye.
Juan Rowe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
No.
Brzezinski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker. Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson.
No.
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist. Burdick.
Aye.
Carter. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Boquist. Carter. Starr. Excuse me. Excused. Boquist. Carter. Voting no. Atkinson. Ferrioli. Cruz. Nelson. Whitsett. 23 ayes.
House Bill 2365, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Action on executive appointments requiring Senate confirmation. The chair recognizes Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I move that the Senate confirmation of the governor's appointments and reappointments be moved to the Tuesday, February 24th calendar.
Senator Devlin has moved that the Senate confirmation of the governor's appointments and reappointments be moved to the Tuesday, February 24th calendar. Senator Devlin, to your motion.
Given the limitations on our time here this morning, I think we all felt it was best to address some of the bills that are before us, so we'll be doing the executive appointments tomorrow.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Senator Devlin, do you wish to close? The question is, shall the Senate move the confirmation of the governor's appointments and reappointments to the Tuesday, February 24th calendar? All those of the opinion that the confirmation should be moved will answer aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion has carried. Introduction and first reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 565, relating nonpartisan offices. Senate Bill 566, relating urban growth management and metropolitan service district. Senate Bill 567, relating concealed handgun licenses. Senate Bill 568, relating firearms. Senate Bill 569, relating firearms. Senate Bill 570, relating to commerce and mental property. Senate Bill 571 relating to fish. Senate Bill 572 relating to sales property subject to lien. Senate Bill 573 relating to firearms. Senate Bill 574 relating to education service districts. Senate Bill 575 relating to persons who are mentally ill. Senate Bill 576 relating to local government recommendations and local licenses. Senate Bill 577 relating to certification and appeals and Supreme Court court emergency. Senate Bill 578 relating to all-terrain vehicle safety and court emergency. Senate Bill 579 relating to motor vehicle safety. Senate Bill 580 relating to Columbia River Crossing project and property money. Senate Bill 581 relating to state financial administration and court emergency. Senate Bill 582 relating to sex offender notification care facilities. Senate Bill 583 relating to all-terrain vehicle helmet requirements. Senate Bill 584 relating to savings and economic interests. Senate Bill 585 relating to renewable energy. Senate Bill 586 relating to income tax brackets and prescribing effective dates. Senate Bill 587 relating to active duty military registration plates. Senate Bill 588 relating to drug test falsification. Senate Bill 589 relating to taxation of Indian tribal land and prescribing effective date. Senate Bill 590 relating to state interoperability executive council. Senate Bill 591 relating to Oregon landowner preference pilot program. Senate Bill 592 relating to DNA samples. Senate Bill 593 relating to horse registration plates and property money. Senate Bill 594 relating to exemption from property taxation and prescribing effective dates. Senate Bill 595 relating to veterans from prescribing court emergency. Senate Bill 596 relating to decarbamamated diphenyl ether. Senate Bill 597 relating to non-governmental entities. Senate Bill 598 relating to pharmaceutical take-back programs, property money, and court emergency. Senate Bill 599 relating to surface mining. Senate Bill 600 relating to public funds and court emergency. Senate Bill 601 relating to investigations by the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots. Senate Bill 602 relating to a task force on core government functions, court emergency. Senate Bill 603 relating to firearms. Senate Bill 604 relating to licenses issued by the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Senate Bill 605 relating to nurses. Senate Bill 606 relating to veterans. Senate Bill 607 relating to outdoor advertising signs. Senate Bill 608 relating to public borrowing for acquisition of railways by Oregon International Port of Coos Bay, appropriate money, and court emergency. Senate Bill 609 relating to protective orders and tax court proceedings, prescribing effective date. Senate Bill 610 relating to approved transportation costs and court emergency. Senate Bill 611 relating to driving while under the influence of intoxicants. Senate Bill 612 relating to state revenue sharing. Senate Bill 613 relating to precinct committee persons. Senate Bill 614 relating to direct testing for purpose of determining eligibility for public assistance. Senate Bill 615 relating to quarterly revenue estimates, court emergency. Senate Bill 616 relating to government ethics, court emergency. Senate Bill 617 relating to motor vehicle repairs.
Transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 3, in memoriam James Ward Bosley, 1935 to 2008. Senate Bill 19 relating to minors. Senate Bill 50 relating to deadlines for notices of claim on contracted payment bonds to court emergency. Senate Bill 82 relating to preparation of state lottery budget reports. Senate Bill 98 relating to veterans transportation, court emergency. Senate Bill 119 relating to discipline by the Teacher Standards Practice Commission, court emergency. Senate Bill 120 relating to first aid cards and court emergency. Senate Bill 121 relating to requirements for school personnel and court emergency. Senate Bill 141 relating to the regulation of escrow agents. Senate Bill 155 relating to chief medical officers of state institutions, court emergency. Senate Bill 160 relating to HIV testing of individuals and state institutions, court emergency. Senate Bill 165 relating to mental health program services. Senate Bill 186 relating to Agricultural Development Division. Senate Bill 251 relating to restricted weapons. Senate Bill 288 relating to representation of individuals with mental illness committed to the Custody Department of Human Services. Senate Bill 428 relating to members of the State Board of Education.
Passed to calendar. Third reading of Senate measures. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 139 relating to Oregon State Board of Nursing.
Chair recognizes Senator Amanda Sanderson.
Mr. President, permission to use a visual aid.
Is there any objection?
I will use it later on. Senate Bill, thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 139 actually deletes the requirement that the Oregon Board of Nursing issue a wallet-sized license as evidence of current Oregon licensure. And they look like this, colleagues. It's really a beautiful credit card looking, and it has the state seal on it. I lost my current license because my purse was stolen, and I think that it's important that this bill is so important because it will actually save the state money, and also it's going to require people who hire nurses to actually call the Board of Nursing or go online to make sure that the licensure of the nurse is current. This way anyone can really show a card like this. And the Oregon State Board of Nursing, it does issue these licenses and renewals, and it is extremely important that the nurses who are actually practicing in the state of Oregon are current. And if an employee just looks at the card and says, "Oh yes, you have a current license," and not go on to online, they could be hiring someone whose license has either expired or has been removed, or if the nurse has been suspended. So, colleagues, I would urge you to vote yes. And in addition, this is going to save about $51,500 in equipment maintenance and supplies, and an estimated $42,000 in labor and postage, which could be diverted to other safety-enhancing projects that the Board of Nursing has. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? If not, Senator Mona Sanderson, do you wish to close? She does not. The question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 139. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer ayes or names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Dinkfelder. Dinkfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Mona Sanderson. Montez Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morris, Nelson, Brzezinski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, President Courtney.
President Courtney.
Excused. Boquist, Carter, 28 ayes.
Senate Bill 139, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 154, relating to the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program.
Chair recognizes Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. Senate Bill 154 repeals the Senior Prescription Drug Assistance Program in the Department of Human Services. Colleagues, mostly because of Medicare Part D, this is unnecessary. But what we really have here is a program that has never been implemented and never been funded, so we're eliminating it. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Not, Senator Cruz, do you wish to close? He does not. The question now arises on third reading, final passage of Senate Bill 154. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morris. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Boquist. Burdick. Carter, Devlin, Dinkfelder, excused, President Courtney, excused, Boquist, Carter, 28 ayes.
Senate Bill 154, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 311, relating to Oregon Tort Claims Act and declaring emergency.
Chair recognizes Senator Prozonsky.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, this bill came out of Judiciary. This is a bill that basically is going to take care of a problem that resulted from a court decision here in the state dealing with our Oregon Tort Claims Act. The President may remember we actually had an interim task force that met during the interim to come up with solutions for making modifications to the Oregon Tort Claims Act as the Clark decision, which is the one that came out through the Supreme Court, that actually said on an as-applied basis, the Tort Claims Act wasn't sufficient to deal with the damages, injuries that this young man had from a medical malpractice claim regarding OHSU. The task force met for some period of time. The charge that we had as the task force was to update the Tort Claims Act as it pertained to the caps, and that's what Senate Bill 311 does. I can tell you, Mr. President, that what's happened is that the tort claims caps have not been updated for over 20 years, and so this was a situation that what we wanted to do is put in place something that reflected current market, as well as being able to have the ability to have that number increase on its own without having us needing to go through the process on a legislative matter to modify those numbers at some point in the future. The Tort Claim Act actually had a couple of the primary members who were the trial lawyers of Oregon, as well as the OHSU, the defendant in the Clark decision. They met on their own separate from the tort claims group, brought back a policy that they thought that we should look at. And we looked at that, and we thought that was a good start. And from there, we built on that. We came up with a two-tier system. Instead of going in great detail as to each of the specifics, what I'm going to do, Mr. President, is open up for questions. But I'll close at that time as to some of the components or parts that make up the Senate Bill 311 that will, in fact, update the Oregon Tort Claims Act. Thank you, Mr. President.
Is there further discussion? Chair recognizes Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. President. I rise in basic support of this bill today, and I will be voting for it. But as it was working its way through its legislative process, and as the work group worked on it over the last interim, I was often asked about this bill and asked whether I supported it or I opposed it, and my answer was always yes. I was both opposed and supporting of it. And I'll tell you why I was mixed as far as my thinking on this bill was concerned, because I don't think we've seen the end of this issue, and I believe we're going to have to deal with it again in the next session or the session after. This bill takes care of a very specific problem, and I congratulate the good Senator Pozanski for the hard work he's done on this and getting this to the place it's at, and we should support this bill. But there are some concerns in the bill itself. One, the caps that are in place are for total caps. By that I mean they cap both economic damages, medical damages, and pain and suffering. And quite frankly, as a physician, I'm going to tell you that I think those are inadequate caps and always will be inadequate caps. We can determine what medical costs are for an injured patient, and we can determine economic damages. We need caps for pain and suffering because that's something that's difficult to do. But having a total cap that is of this nature is inadequate. The bill does call for an expeditious way of moving it to the Supreme Court, which I appreciate, because I think the first difficult case that occurs at OHSU will go quickly to the Supreme Court, and these caps will once more be thrown out, and we'll be back here working on the same issue again. The other issue for me is that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Physicians at OHSU are in a special category. They are public employees, but they do the same things that all other physicians in the state do. They practice the same way. They take care of the same kind of cases. They run the same risks. And if they need caps for pain and suffering, then I believe all physicians do. That is not in this bill. It was not in what this bill was supposed to do, and I recognize that, and I appreciate that. One last issue. Medical malpractice is something that dramatically affects the cost of health care, but not in the way you might think. It does not affect the cost of health care from the point of view of premiums paid out or damages to patients or what tort lawyers receive. That's about 0.5% of the total health care costs in the state each year. The real cost of medical malpractice is the unnecessary things that are done to patients for physicians trying to prevent themselves from being sued. That runs 15% to 20%. $1.5 to $2 billion a year of wasted medical care, actually doing things that are hurting patients now. We estimate that 3 to 5% of all the new chest cancers in America are going to be caused by the excessive use of CAT scanners on people who are being CAT scanned purely for defensive medicine. These practices have to stop. Colleagues, someday we're going to have to deal with this problem in this state. Oregon is one of the most liberal states as far as malpractice is concerned. There's better ways of doing this, better things for patients, better things for the lawyers involved and better ways of doing it for physicians. I look forward to working with others of you in this session next to bring true medical malpractice reform to this state, to bring health care costs down, to make sure our fellow Oregonians are safe. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Chair recognizes Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. President. Question of the carrier, please.
Will the carrier yield to a question? He will.
Thank you, Senator. Section 21 repeals ORS 30.270. By deleting ORS 30.270, the current distinction between special damages and general damages is removed from statute. Could you please explain how this change in statute originated during the Tort Task Force deliberations? And secondly, please explain how the repeal of ORS 30.270 may provide an advantage for tort plaintiff lawyers who sue the state or the state's employees to leverage out-of-state settlements by the state.
Thank you for the questions. Let me start off with the first question. The first question is how this came about. It was a policy decision. If you remember from our time that we served on the task force together, that the two major principals in this group were OHSU as well as the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association. They had met on their own individually without any knowledge of the chairs or any other committee members from my knowledge. They came back with a proposal after going through a mediation process with a federal judge. And one of the policies that they looked at was collapsing in where you would not have a distinction between economic and non-economic damages. That's what ORS 30.270 represents, is the separation of those two, which was in fact in place, looks like, since 1987 when we last addressed the Oregon Tort Claim Act. It was a decision that was made. The policy was one that we felt that would be more conducive and not having them to be required to be separate and separated out as they have been in the past. So that's one of the reasons that we got the what is before us now and why it's going to be voted on today as to whether or not people agree with that policy change. Regarding the benefits that a trial lawyer may receive by having these collapsed to get some type of out-of-court settlement, I guess I would beg to differ as to the testimony that we had. I believe you asked the similar questions during our hearings, and one of the issues was whether the structure of the complaint was going to be the same, or is this going to somehow change it? And they said, no, it would not. It would be the same. And how would the case be handled? And they said it would be handled the same. The reality is, for a settlement to be reached, there's going to have to be a determination by those who are being sued that they have liability. If they determine they have liability, then they hopefully will be looking at what are the damages that are being alleged from economic as well as non-economic, and then they can make a determination as to what is in the best interest of getting a settlement or should they take it to trial. If you're asking as to whether or not I believe this is somehow going to increase what is known as nuisance suits, I would say not, because the bottom line here for Oregon Tort Claims Act to be applicable is that there's going to have to be a showing and demonstration that there was in fact a tort that has been occurred, and at that point that there are damages that resulted from that tort or the injury from that conduct.
Thank you, Senator. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
I respectfully disagree with my good committee chair on a couple of points. It is my understanding that the 1987 legislature changed the terminology of the law, but basically they changed the term special damages to what is now called economic damages and general damages to what is now called non-economic damages. It was just a matter of semantics. It is also my recollection, as the good senator pointed out, that the deal to repeal ORS 30.270 originated in a separate closed-door negotiation between OHSU and the plaintiff lawyers. This Section 21 that was accepted by the committee with not a lot of debate. In my opinion, and this is my opinion, it is the outright gift to the plaintiff lawyers that they required before they would further negotiate liability caps. The bundling of economic and non-economic damages will allow tort suits to be structured in a manner that will certainly encourage the state to settle out of court rather than suffer exposure to punitive claims of non-economic damages before a jury. I believe that this law, as currently written, will provide such an unfair advantage to the plaintiff lawyers that the state will settle out of court in most suits. The winners will be the plaintiffs and the tort lawyers who work on the contingency. The losers will be the taxpayers who will foot the bill. Our state desperately needs tort reform, and I would desperately like to vote for a tort reform bill. But, Mr. President, Senate Bill 311 is not that answer, and I will not be able to support it today. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. President. I served on the task force, and I've been in this legislative body for 10 years, struggling to bring justice to Oregonians who have been aggrieved by the low numbers available under the Oregon Tort Claims Act. While OHSU is a state hospital, by virtue of a very slim amount of money this state provides to them, they've been able to slide under the radar and make mistakes. They do make mistakes, and they make mistakes on citizens of this state who cannot find redress because they are a state-funded facility. This is not right. This has been unfair. I can provide you stacks of cases of individuals who have been aggrieved by this hospital. And the Jordan Michael Clark case was the most egregious and brought this to a head because this young man will never live a normal life like you and I live every single day. And this was a stupid mistake that was made by someone in this hospital. They should not be limited to a paltry sum of $200,000 for their claim. No lawyer was willing to take on many of these cases until the Jordan Michael Clark lawyers did, because they don't get paid. By the time you sue, there's hardly anything there for the plaintiff. And in fact, in the Jordan Michael Clark case, OHSU filed a lien against their $200,000 that the plaintiff could obtain. They filed a lien for their hospital services. It's absolutely absurd. Now, some of you want to make this about tort reform, and I don't want to do that because that's a discussion somewhere else. That's a discussion that I think, should you do the research, you'll find that states that have passed tort reform aren't really finding that it's working all that well. What this is about is government and how it operates, and government and how it serves its citizens. This bill is the right way to rectify a wrong that has been in statute for a long period of time. We've worked hard on this task force. I appreciate the efforts of the chairs and appreciate that the governor put this together. We thought we had it last session. We didn't quite get there. This was a very comprehensive process to find a way that works for all government organizations. This one respects the dignity of all Oregonians in this state, should they be aggrieved by a governmental entity. This bill is fair, this bill is just, and it rights a wrong that has been in our statute for decades. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. The chair recognizes Senator Girard.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the bill?
To the bill.
Colleagues, actually, I could just say ditto to what Senator Bates said. It's, he and I are on the same page as far as the need for tort reform. I believe very strongly that across the board, and that's just not in healthcare, that also goes to nonprofits and charities, we are risking a tremendous amount because of just unabated lawsuits that are going forward with huge pain and suffering clauses. Now, I think we need to differentiate between the two types of damages in healthcare, and this bill does not do that. First, non-economic damages is pain and suffering, and second is economic damages, which are the actual damages as far as treatment's going to concern over the life of the patient. This bill limits economic damages as well as non-economic damages. The problem that we have in healthcare really is in the pain and suffering clause of healthcare, where it's just outrageous pain and suffering awards have been made in the courts for $20-30 million, which then it becomes a problem in which we change our modality of treatment so that now up to 25% of health care is considered cover your derriere health care, in that you're not doing it for the patient, you're doing it to cover your own derriere. And I think that that's something that we need to look at. The other thing is the private sector argument versus the public sector. We're going to give OHSU an advantage over all other hospitals, especially in the Portland area, which doesn't seem fair either. These are nonprofits. These aren't people that are out to make a huge, tremendous amount of money. But the fact that they do not have tort reform, I think, is grossly unfair. However, as someone that is for tort reform and putting some limits, this is a small step forward, and it's one of those bills that you can argue, does it go far enough? And I think the answer is absolutely no. Is it a step in the right direction? Yeah, probably is, and so I'll be a yes vote, but it's not that I'm a yes vote because I think it's a great bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, most of the folks in this room are very, very well aware of the difficulty that we've had with Oregon Health Sciences University and other institutions that provide health care and other practitioners, because we lost what we thought was a defensible tort cap. We looked around and studied the issue and learned that Texas, for instance, has a constitutionally defensible tort cap. And that's a really critical element because the practice of medicine in Texas is not much different than the practice of medicine in Oregon, except it's less expensive. California has solved this problem by facing it forthrightly. They have a legally defensible, constitutionally workable tort cap. What we have before us today is a very interesting thing, but before I leave the issue of Oregon Health Sciences University, I had the honor and privilege of meeting with a student this morning who's a student at the Oregon Health Sciences University, and he's decided to go into the practice of family medicine. That makes him worth his weight in gold or more. He's not going to go into one of the medical specialties that might put him in an urban area with a very lucrative practice. He's actually going to go practice family medicine and maybe even in a rural area. And that's the kind of kid that we want engaged at Oregon Health Sciences University. He told me that as a result of the loss of the tort cap at OHSU, tuition increased 17%. And they cut 15 doctors out of the doctoral program because of the loss of this tort cap. You talk about an unintended consequence and a bad outcome. I thought we needed more doctors. So here we are today. We're going to enact this bill. Let's have no mistake about that. This is on rails. This bill couldn't even be slowed down so we could have an honest discussion about tort reform. We're going to protect government and public corporations. We're going to protect cities and counties. And we're going to protect Oregon Health Sciences University. But we're not going to do anything for the hundreds of thousands of doctors in the state of Oregon and the health clinics, from little public health clinics all the way up to our type A and B hospitals and the urban hospitals. We're not going to do anything for them. And as a matter of fact, I think what this bill represents is sort of a poison pill that the trial lawyers have devised to take some of the heat off of them so that tort reform actually is contained. This is sort of a containment vessel. Oregon Health Sciences University, the loss of their tort cap caused such an uprising of anger and angst that it was getting too many headlines. And so this little containment vessel was constructed to sort of become tort reform light and to remove the headlines about tort reform. I can write the story. Tomorrow when this news is reported, it'll be that the Senate and the legislature acted to limit tort to save Oregon Health Sciences University. And it won't be saving or solving the problem. It's, as I said before, it's a containment vessel. What would be the best approach for tort reform is to actually do it. You know, and in so doing, actually lower the cost of insurance, lower the cost to citizens, lower the cost to hospitals, reduce the amount of cost shifting that goes on, maybe even reduce the pressure on this building for a provider tax and a whole bunch of other revenue measures that we've got. But this, colleagues, is not the best approach to tort reform. This is simply recognition by the trial lawyers that the current system is so offensive to citizens, with Oregon Health Sciences University in the crosshairs and cities and counties, that they're willing to take this poison pill. They're willing to sort of open the bottle, even though there's a Mr. Yuck sticky on it, and do this tort reform light to prevent real tort reform. Well, I got to tell you something, colleagues. If this is good enough for Oregon Health Sciences University in cities and counties, why isn't it good enough for all healthcare practitioners and all hospitals? And the only reason I can think of is that the trial lawyers would never agree to that. So, colleagues, don't think you're voting tort reform. You may be voting tort reform light, but what you're really doing is helping to construct a containment vessel around the job this body should be doing, and that's forthrightly facing tort reform as it's been done in California and Texas. Mr. President, I'll be voting no on this bill, because I don't believe that we're doing the people's business here today. I believe what we're doing is helping to maintain a system that harms folks, causes cost shifting, and doesn't provide the kind of relief people need. What's really going on in this bill is that from now on, from this day forward, we're going to roll up actual damages, the non-economic damages, with the economic damages, so that lawyers don't have to explain to people that they were able to get actual damages that had to be proven, and also they were going to be able to get non-economic damages, which is sort of like taking a chance on a lottery ticket. Whatever you can convince a jury to award will be available in these cases now, and separating the two will be unnecessary as a real result of our action today. That is what the trial lawyers are really after. So, colleagues, I've harangued you enough. I think this is an excuse for tort reform, not real tort reform. I wish you'd vote no so that we could start the conversation about real tort reform in Oregon. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Cruz yielded time. Chair recognizes Senator Atkinson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I don't want to say what everyone else has said, but the bottom line is, if it's good enough for one hospital, it should be good enough for all. I am a tremendous fan of Oregon Health Science University and had this very same conversation in my office with their officials. But at a time when Providence Health System is struggling, in a time when Asante Health System is struggling, and at a time when our physicians, especially in Southern Oregon, are paying huge malpractice premiums, it would make a tremendous amount of sense to me to make this apply to everyone. I'm very concerned that in this building, when we get something that to pass, we call it reform and then we never touch it again. We, instead of actually addressing the bill, what we, or this body does, is it appoints blue ribbon task forces and interim committees, and then nothing ever happens. It would be better for us to do this properly by applying it to all hospitals and physicians now, especially at a time when layoffs are occurring, especially at a time when healthcare services are at an all-time high, and especially at a time when hospitals are struggling. The savings that Oregon Health Sciences will receive from this, and duly noted, is about $20 million, and that's good. But I can think of quite a few rural hospitals that could use the same savings.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. President. I will support this bill, but I am kind of disappointed because I do have a bill that may not get a hearing, and that is to include any doctor who would choose to work with Medicare or Medicaid patients under this cap. I think it is atrociously bad that we don't have malpractice caps. We're one of, well, there are 11 states that do not have it. I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention about this. Well, let me say what is really motivating me is that we are going to run out of money to assist OBGYNs and other rural physicians in their malpractice suits, and we are going to lose people. There's a physician in Pendleton, who came to Oregon from Tennessee because of those caps, will be leaving the state. I talked to them at the rural conference, and I think it's a real mistake. We need to have some responsible caps. I have another bill that would require, which probably won't go anywhere either, both sides to mediate before it goes to trial. Now, the trial lawyers don't like this because they have to lay their cards on the table. But in Idaho and other states, there is a mediation process that if there is a malpractice suit filed, the attorneys on both sides talk about it to see if they can come to a settlement, which I think is a halfway point. But again, I don't expect that bill to pass or even get a hearing. What we have right now is necessary. I'm not going to vote no on this because I think we need to solve this problem. But I am going to continue to work towards some kind of responsible malpractice tort reform. Caps in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. President. I stand in agreement with my good colleague from John Day, but I'm standing also to explain I'm going to vote yes for this bill because I'm extremely encouraged. Colleagues, if we're going to be intellectually honest about the application of law consistently across the spectrum of all providers, this bill sets the template for the continuing discussion. This may be, unfortunately, the only discussion we have in this session on tort reform, and that's tragic. But this is a bill that is a start. It's a bill that I think gives us direction, and it's a bill that we should look at more broadly, not just specifically to OHSU and the publics in Oregon. I had a recent discussion with a physician in Albany, and the comment from this physician, a general practitioner, was that if I order, I'm totally at risk. If I order, I'm not at risk. If I don't order, I'm totally at risk. This whole issue, as the good senator from Medford said, centers around defensive medicine and its cost and its impact, and it's real. And if we are going to address the Oregon Health Fund Board recommendations and we leave out the discussion about tort reform, we have missed the boat, totally missed the boat. We've got to bend that cost curve. And one of the ways you do that is you begin to create incentives for physicians to operate at the top of their license, not at the bottom of their license where they take the defensive role and order. So, colleagues, I'm encouraged, because I think this sets the stage for an intellectually honest discussion about the broader tort reform issues in this state, and I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? If not, Senator Prozonsky, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. President, I do. Thank you very much. So, colleagues, what I want to do is kind of go through some of the points that have been made during our discussion. First of all, I'm going to tell Mr. President, I chose not to stand up as to germaneness of a lot of the issues that were discussed on the floor today, because I thought this is something that probably needed to be out and didn't want to, let's say, stifle that discussion. But since it has come out, then it's only fair to respond to it. Let's start off with the caps themselves. The issue that we have before us is the Oregon Tort Claims Act has absolutely nothing to do with tort reform. The Tort Claims Act was actually put in place to give an insulation for those individuals or entities that are actually providing services to the greater public, meaning the citizens of this state, are at a local level in the communities, either at a county level or at a city level. Also, at the point of being in a position of one that is being funded by tax dollars. So because of that, that is why we have, in fact, a breakout for having a different set of damages or, let's say, caps on what damages would be as they're applied in those scenarios where you have a service being provided by a governmental unit as compared to someone out there in the public, private slash sector. Now, the reason the caps are important is that you need to have predictability. If you go back and listen to the tapes, the testimony, no matter who is doing the insuring, they need some predictability to knowing what the risk is, so then they're able to fund the liabilities at that. Now, this particular case that brought this to our attention that caused us to have to deal with this occurred this last year. And it was basically one that kind of dropped on our lap. We weren't able to address it during the February session because of the shortness of the session, the complexity of the issues. And so the president, in his good wisdom, along with the Speaker of the House, chose that we would set up this task force, which did, in fact, meet during the interim to address this issue. Again, dealing with the caps under the Tort Reform, the Oregon Tort Claims Act, nothing dealing with tort reform. Now, my good colleague from Ashland talked about now in the medical field that you're hearing about what's known as defensive medical practices. Let me just put this on the record. Even though I have never practiced in the area of products liability, personal injury, or any of these type of tort locations for injuries to individuals, as a prosecutor, I would tell those doctors that they should think twice before ordering some type of test that could, in fact, cause someone to have some type of cancer, because they're basically setting themselves up for a lawsuit, what we just heard that we're trying to stay away from. So hopefully, in their wisdom as to whatever test they're applying to have done for their patient, that they're actually measuring the real need for that, or you may be opening up a new gateway for attorneys to be suing doctors for doing procedures that are not called for or justified in the determination of providing health care for that individual. Now, my colleague from Kay Falls talked about the breaking out, or let's say collapsing of non-economic and economic damages into one. First of all, let me correct the record where I stated that this was something that was done in 87. He is correct. In 1987, what they did is just change the terms that were used instead of special damages going to economic and non-economic. But to say that there's some type of gift that came out of this task force to give attorneys some type of unbridled ability to bring these suits and then not have to prove up their damages that their victim client has actually suffered is just totally wrong. And again, let's put on the record that this came as a negotiations between doctors who agreed with the attorneys that this is the way they thought it would be best and a better policy for the state. And the task force did, in fact, discuss it. We agreed that that was a framework that we could live with and that made sense to change the policy, and that's what we did. So under the charge of the task force, we were asked to do one thing. That is to look at the Oregon Tort Claims Act and make changes to it as to the caps that were currently in place. Now, we need to realize, and my good colleague from Ashland laid this out as to his concern to seeing us come back time and time again to adjust the caps. What happened in the Clark decision is the Supreme Court looked at that and they said, on an as-applied basis, the tort caps were too low. They did not rule, overrule our Oregon Tort Claims Act. And in fact, today, as we are here debating this, the Oregon Tort Claims Act is still alive and well. What we haven't seen is another unique situation, as we did in the Clark decision, that caused the court to say, as applied, the Tort Claims Act with its caps that are currently in place do not suffice to take care of that damage or those injuries and the loss of services that an individual might need to provide for themselves for the remainder of their life. But this bill that's before us will, in fact, increase those numbers significantly. What we also learned from the local entities, meaning the cities, the special districts, and the counties, is that the cap proposal that was brought back for this, that became the state side of the tier, was too big, too broad, and too unpredictable for them to be able to not only afford, but to even be able to pay the premiums that would be required. Now, we've heard today on the floor that some people think that the private sector should get the same benefit as the government sector. Well, I would charge back and say, how many of those private sectors are actually doing what the public sector has to do? OHSU takes on many, many individuals that other hospitals will not even let in the front door, let alone provide the services for them. And they also do a lot of experimental surgery that in some places, other places, they won't do. And it may be the last resort, the last opportunity for these individuals to actually have an opportunity to get the services they need and to be well. Now, tort reform. I had the opportunity to be one of the individuals on judiciary. I believe the last time we looked at this issue was in 2003. It could have been 2005, but I think it was 2003. But the reality is we could not get off the dime because the two major players in that, the doctors and the lawyers, as they have done through the last 20 years, refused to actually give or take at any point of the discussions. It should be reminded that what we have before us in the Oregon Constitution is a requirement that a trier of fact gets to determine what is the injury and what should be paid out, if anything, based on a loss. And the courts have held that that is a right that each, every Oregonian has, and that we as an individual body have no authority to stifle that or to change that. There's been at least two votes to the people of this state. Both of them have gone down in failure, trying to establish some type of tort reform and rewrite the Constitution to take away that question. And the people of this state have said no. In fact, as you can imagine, they've said it very strongly the second time. In fact, a third time was attempted to actually even get something qualified for the ballot for tort reform. The proponents couldn't even get the signatures to get it before the voters then. Now, I stand here before all of you and will say the same. I am more than willing to reopen that door for a candid discussion on tort reform, but it is not going to happen during this session because we don't have the time. Plus, there's going to have to be good faith on the part of the doctors and the attorneys and their respective lobbyists to come in with an open mind, a clean slate, and being willing to look at outside of their own box to see what we can do for the state and tort reform. I hope to be able to get that group together, and if they're willing to go there, I will go there as well, and we'll have a committee or a task force that will work with us during the next interim. But if there's coming in and saying, well, we can't even open the door to other options, then we're not going to go there because there's no reason to waste our time if we don't have people that are willing to play the part of finding change that is going to be acceptable to all. Now, regarding premiums that doctors play, well, I know a system that works. I know a system that could actually take some of that load off. And my talking to many of my physician friends, they said that they would love to see that relief. And so maybe now we can have that discussion as well. Mr. President, I want to thank you for the opportunity to get a few things on the record. I want to thank for the debate that we've had today. I also want to thank the task force that spent the time during this interim to put together this bill that does, in fact, answer what is required to fix the Oregon Tort Claims Act as needed. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Call of the Senate.
Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the Senate. He is joined by Senators Burdick and Walker. The barkeeper will bar the doors, and the What did I say here? Okay, oh yeah, the dark keepers, please bar those doors. And the sergeant arms will attend. Clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger.
Here.
Juan Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
All members subject to the call are present. Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 311. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger.
Aye.
Bonas Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. President Courtney. Excused. Boquist. Voting no. Atkinson. Ferrioli. George. Cruz. Whitsett. 24 ayes.
Senate Bill 311, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 367, relating Thomas Paine.
Chair recognizes Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I move that consideration of Senate Bill 367 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on the Thursday, February 26th calendar.
Senator Devlin has moved that consideration of Senate Bill 367 be taken from its place on today's third reading calendar and placed on the Thursday, February 26th calendar. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, our colleague, Senator Boquist, would like to carry the bill. He is excused until Thursday.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Not, Senator Devlin. Do you wish to close? Okay, so the question is on taking Senate Bill 367 from today's third reading calendar and placing it on the Thursday, February 6th calendar. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion carries. Without objection, the remaining bills on the third reading Senate calendar will be held over until tomorrow, Tuesday, February 4th calendar. First reading of House measures.
House Concurrent Resolution 3, Memoriam Brian Johnson, 1949 to 2008. House Bill 2045, relating persons authorized to make findings of impairment for rating of injured workers' disability. House Bill 2061, relating graduation requirements, court emergency. House Bill 2065, relating correction of erroneous material and Oregon tax law. House Bill 2106, relating to bonds for schools and court emergency. House Bill 2107, relating to public borrowing and court emergency. House Bill 2161, relating to sexual assessment and property tax purposes. House Bill 2162, relating to property tax appeals and prescribing effective date. House Bill 2170, relating to sex offender registration. House Bill 2195, relating to vocational rehabilitation providing workers' compensation claims. House Bill 2210, relating to State Board of Agriculture membership. House Bill 2213, relating to invasive species council and court emergency. House Bill 2238, relating to hardship permits. House Bill 2252, relating to telecommunication and court emergency. House Bill 2256, relating to State Housing Council review of Housing and Community Services Department transactions. House Bill 2257, relating to Community Development Incentive Project Fund. House Bill 2258, relating to individual development accounts. House Bill 2259, House relating to Community Action Directors of Oregon. House Bill 2273, relating to enforcement child support obligations by suspension privileges. House Bill 2274, relating to referral of support obligations, Department of Revenue. House Bill 2277, relating to charges and support award when county fiscal custody changes. House Bill 2375, relating to fireworks, businesses, and exclusive farm use zone. House Bill 2436, relating to public programs for housing, prescribing effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by 3/5 majority.
Transmitted to the President's desk for referral. Second reading of House measures.
House Bill 5015, relating to State Financial Administration, Public Money Court Emergency. House Bill 2202, relating to Unemployment Insurance Hearings. House Bill 2284, relating to Correction of Erroneous Material in Oregon Law. House Bill 2298, relating to Donated Leave. House Bill 2312, relating to Recognition of Businesses Entities formed by Tribal Governments and Court Emergency. House Bill 2321, relating to Department of Corrections. House Bill 2323, relating to Property Offenses. House Bill 2357, relating to Disclaimers.
Passed calendar. Third reading of House measures. Other business of the Senate, in accordance with SR 8.403, committee referral list number 41, was distributed to the members February 17th. Lists 42 and 43 were distributed February 18th, and lists 44 and 45 were distributed February 19th. The referrals will be recorded in the journal and status report. So ordered. Announcements. Chair recognizes Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, Senate Democrats, please get your lunch and be in the caucus room by 12:04.
Thank you, Senator. Chair recognizes Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we have a brief, and I emphasize brief, caucus scheduled. So if Republicans will go immediately to the caucus room, we can get them through that caucus and get them out off to their business. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further announcements? If there are no further announcements, without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, Tuesday, February 24th.